Welcome to the Flawless Day. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. You can support us, our work, by going to theflawlessday.tv/donate. All right? Or locals.com. Locals.com. And I do appreciate it. We have a lot of work to do. And thank you all so much for what you've already done. I have with me Paul R. Friedman. Paul R. Friedman. He is an author and TV executive who spent 3 decades as vice president of creative content at CBS. His book is called The Unexpected Danny Green. Amazing. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure to be here.
Really appreciate it, Paul. I want to ask you about your book first.
Okay.
In short, your book is about what?
You know, it's about a young African-American man, young black kid, who's raised in Mississippi. He comes to New York. Early on in his life, he realizes he's got tremendous intellectual curiosity. He also has a tremendous left hook. Now, he's raised on the wrong side of the tracks, but to the right family. His mother's a grade school teacher. His father is a journeyman. He repairs lawnmowers. And he has this thirst for knowledge. So early in his life, his father, he checks out books at the library, historical figures, history, and he reads those books to the young kids in the family as they're growing up. Mm. So he inculcates them with a desire, a thirst for knowledge. So Jesse's a smart kid, but he's also a very physically gifted kid.
Amazing. And what made you decide to write about him?
I just had this notion that this guy would be a really interesting character. And he comes up to New York. Eventually, he comes out to L.A. and has experiences in Hollywood. I lived in New York for 7 years.
Right.
And so I used a lot of the experiences I had, and I sort of transposed them onto this character, onto Danny Green. I just thought it would really be interesting to write about a kid who's not from the inner city,
yeah,
who also has, you know, a tremendous sort of family background, doesn't have a lot of wealth. He's very ambitious, and he's very industrious.
Is it a true story?
It's not a true story,
no.
But it sounds so true, though. Well, there's a lot of historical characters that are sort of put into the story. For example, there's Howard Cosell. He encounters him and various things that took place in New York
right. When
I lived there. Also, I might say, it's not all fighting and boxing, but the fights that are in there were all fights that actually took place, and I put him in that situation.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nice. Is this your first book?
Yes, it's my first novel.
Right on, man. Mm-hmm. What's important to you?
I learned very early to rely on myself. Unfortunately, my dad passed away when I was very young, but I realized I had some inner resources. And I learned to kind of gratify myself, satisfy myself, and that was through achievement. I don't know where that came from, but as I grew up and I got older, I saw that if you could really make something that you felt that was good, that was gratifying, you could be successful. And I had a teacher, and he used to say, in this business, the entertainment business, if you can do that, if you can be creative, he said, the money will come. You don't have to go after the money. And it did. And that's what happened in my life.
That makes sense.
But I was persistent, you know.
Yeah.
He used to say, the world is full of talented people, but not necessarily industrious people. So the world belongs to the industrious. And if you can combine the two, I think you can be very successful.
Amazing. And so you became the vice president of CBS Creative Content.
Yeah, marketing.
How did that come about?
Well, that's the end of the story, Jesse. The beginning of the story is I graduated from college, and I went and I got a job. After a lot of tries, I got a job at CBS as a page. I started at the bottom, seating audiences, giving tours of the facility, and doing. Then I made the great move, Jesse. I took the lateral move, and I moved to the mailroom. It was a silly, silly move.
But
I thought,
move.
At least I can get inside the building,
yeah,
and I can meet people that way. And eventually I was writing, and at the time I was also acting, pursuing an acting career and a directing career. And somebody took an interest in my work, and through a series of circumstances, I got an opportunity to start writing some promos. And I had no idea back then when I started that this area of the business, on-air promotion, marketing for shows, was going to be a real growth industry within the business.
Amazing. And you're around what age at the time?
I was 20, 22, 23, right out of college.
That's amazing.
So when things weren't going the way I thought they might, I always had a love for New York. And I picked up and I moved to New York and was fortunately successful there.
And so what is success?
I think success is finding something that you're passionate about, pleasing yourself, being selfish in your pursuit of greatness, and then having something to give to others as a result. If you spend 8 hours a day practicing the piano, that's a selfish act. Many should say, well, maybe you should be feeding the poor. But if you do that after 5, 10 years of that, what happens? You have an opportunity to give an incredible gift to the world.
When you reflect on your life, you know, you sit back sometimes and reflect, wow, I've been whatever. How do you see it? What do you think about the way things have turned out for you? Are you surprised? What do you think about the way things turned out for you?
I believe I've been very fortunate. I don't say lucky, I say fortunate.
Right.
But I've worked for everything, and I persisted. And when the chips were down, you know, you go within yourself, you find inner resolve, and you carry through. And not everything, you know, I didn't matriculate automatically upward.
Right.
There were setbacks along the way. But I always felt that I could overcome the obstacles, much like the character in my book, and I could be persistent, and hopefully, talent will out.
Did you think at any point that you wasn't going to make it?
No. I didn't know how far I would go,
right.
But there was no doubt. It's not like I was saying, "Oh, I'm going to quit and go be a plumber," or "I'm going to," you know. There was no thinking about quitting,
right,
or thinking about not pursuing the goal.
And so you were raised by your mother, because your father aspired, right?
Yeah, he died when I was 2 years old.
Two
years old.
Really?
Yeah.
And so, what was that like being raised with your mother and not your father, your father not around?
You know, the most interesting thing about that is my mother was a very strong person. She was an immigrant originally from Germany, so she has this Germanic approach. She's no longer with us. My grandmother, on the other hand, she was a more sort of sensitive person, more accepting person.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, the sort of father figure and mother figure were personified in two different women.
Right.
So. You know, I was always in my mind, I suppose, looking for a father figure, somebody that could guide me. But very early on, I said, you know, you're going to have to find it within yourself. And then along the way, there were certain men in my life who were like guideposts, who were in my life at a particular time that helped me understand and propel me forward.
And so with your father dying, aspiring at such an early age in your life, What did you do about that yearning that you had for your father? You know, when father's not around, we all have that yearning for him.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that?
Well, I, as I recall, there were a lot of tears at night when I was trying to fall asleep. You know, why were we different? Why didn't I have a dad? Why did he leave us? And, you know, you sort of grapple with that because there's a big hole that's missing.
Yeah.
And you either can sort of become... You can be killed by that or destroyed by that, or I think you can become stronger as a person and have conviction. And I just had this forward thrust, and that's the thing that moved me forward, moved me out of that situation.
Right on. Are you over that yearning now for your father? Is that gone? That void has been completed?
Yeah.
And how did, for those who don't, there are a lot of people struggling with that. How did you overcome that void, that emptiness? What would you suggest to them?
I think I filled it with something creative, something that I was passionate about, and it gave me gratification. It gave me some satisfaction.
Okay.
I think also I have a sister and brother. My sister has children, and I've been somewhat of a parent to them in my own way. I've been a paternal figure, and I've always been very open and accepting of them, and I think I've helped guide them, and that's nourished me.
Right on. I wanted to ask, so like, the mistake that your mother made while raising you, because it's difficult. Did she remarry?
She didn't.
Really?
No.
Nice. Did you forgive her for the mistake she made in raising you?
Yes, I did. I've got to say, my mother, it's an incredibly interesting story, which we probably don't have time for. But she had been raised by a stepfather, and she didn't like that at all.
Not at all.
And she didn't want anyone telling her how to raise her children.
Right. Oh,
and,
good.
And that was a thing with her.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It is not good for when a couple break up like that and they have kids. You're 40, you're father of God, but they have kids. It's not good for the father or the mother to bring a step-parent in. It's hard enough for the kids when it's just one parent. Mm-hmm. But if you bring a step-parent, the kids are not going to accept that. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a mess.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why, as sort of the uncle, I would insinuate myself into the life of my niece and nephew to some extent.
Yes.
And let them know from an early age, hey, if you ever need to talk about anything or want to talk, yeah, I'm here. I'm here for you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to guide you. I'm here to give you some strength if I can. And we had that rapport, and I was very happy about that.
I wanted to ask you one other question about your book for now. When you consider writing a book, were you surprised that, you know what, I'm about to write a book. I wrote a book. Were you surprised that that happened in your life?
Yeah. I mean, you start working, you start writing, and before you know it, the characters start talking. They start telling you where they want to go, what they want to say, and you learn very early on, let them go, yeah, and then you can always pull them back.
Yeah.
You know. And whenever anyone asks me about writing, what's the secret? And the secret is so simple. It's just write.
Yes.
Get it out there.
Yeah.
Put it on a piece of paper. Put it in the computer. You can always come back and rewrite. This book was not just written. I rewrote it 1,000 times. You know, everything, yeah, everything. I wanted, yeah, it to be meticulously crafted. And most importantly, if I had an emotion when I was writing a particular scene or a particular character, that's not what I wanted. I wanted you to have the emotion when you read it. It's not important for me to have the emotion. It's important, yeah, for you to respond the way I want you to. I want you to be to have that, to cry, to laugh, to smile, whatever it is. And so I've got to write it in such a way that that's going to impart that to you.
Nice. So will you write another one?
Yeah, I'm actually finishing another one right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
I remember when I was asked to write my first book, I wrote three books in one pamphlet. I was stunned that I couldn't believe, because I never imagined to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised when that came about in my life.
And didn't you find that there were all sorts of things that you didn't realize you could talk about?
Absolutely.
And all sorts of specificity that you could get to?
Absolutely.
And your points of view that you didn't realize until you started working it.
Yes. Absolutely, man. Amazing. Do you have perfect peace?
Perfect peace. Mm.
Yeah.
There are moments, yeah, but not all the time.
And why not all the time?
Maybe because I'm still, even though I've gotten older, I'm still anxious to get more ideas out, to pursue more things, to have more goals. So it causes me to be a little to agitate a little bit about myself. But I'm at peace with that.
Right.
I'm at peace with the fact that I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to work. Even though I'm not at CBS anymore, I'm still going to create. I'm still going to write. I'm still going to come up with an idea.
Do you miss working at CBS?
Not anymore. No.
You did.
I'm away from it enough now that I don't miss it. But it was a great training ground. I mean, for a while I worked in the news division in New York, and I had to write on demand every day, as you know, on deadline.
Right.
You know what that's about.
Yes.
So to me, that was like going to the gym. That's like working out, doing dumbbells. And so now, and for years after that, I was able to sit down, whatever the environment, and work. Because I had that muscle, that tool that I had developed.
Yeah. What is it like being anxious?
Anxious. Hmm. I think there's something about anxiousness that takes away your sexual appeal and your sense of humor. If you're nervous, if you're hysterical, right, you can't be sexy, and you certainly can't have a sense of humor.
That's for sure. That's amazing. Do you have anger?
Oh, yeah. Sure I have anger.
And Why do you have it?
I think anger when I see injustice, when I see people trying to convince you of something that you know to be not truthful. And one of the things you learn in acting class is you learn to sort of recognize truth. And a lot of people think they can sort of just tell you something and it's going to be, you're going to accept it just because they claim it to be their truth. Whereas you see what the reality is, what the truth is.
And so, what's the purpose? How did you become angry?
Become angry?
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a dad, because I had to fight for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I fought a lot with other kids and acted out, as they say, was incorrigible. You know what I think? And this, I bring this up in the new book. When you look at kids, they really are like little animals. They don't have a conscious ability. It's not that they don't want to. It's not that I didn't want to, quote unquote, be good or behave or do what my mom said. I was impulsive, you know, and I think as you get older, you start to realize there is a part in your mind that kind of grows in and gives you some self-awareness and self-control. And then maybe you're able to function in society, but maintain that great sort of reptilian side of you.
Amazing. Did you become like your mother?
No. No, because I was careful about the cautiousness, not the cautiousness, but the control aspect, which I think can be fairly common among women who want to
try
and control a situation.
Yeah. And so you didn't become like her because you were aware enough not to become like her.
Yeah, I was aware when I saw certain things, characteristics that she had come up in me.
Yeah.
I took them out and I took a look at it and I said, that's not me, that's somebody else.
Nice. And why don't you drop your anger so you can stop being cautious or anxious?
Well,
why not drop the anger?
Yeah, the anger isn't there all the time. It really isn't.
But
I don't walk around hostile and angry and ready to jump out of my skin.
And so, why not drop it so you would never have it again? So it's just not a part of your nature, and have perfect peace. Why not drop it?
That's a good idea. Why not? Why not indeed, sir?
So why won't you just drop it?
Okay. I mean, I don't know. There's a certain sort of fuel in that, maybe. You know, years ago when I was working at NBC, and this guy sold a script, a speculation script, to a show, and I was like, I can do that. And how does this guy isn't that great. Anyway, that gave me some fuel, I suppose. And maybe anger does that a little bit to me. It lets me be a little more outrageous.
And so if you can drop it, it is possible, if you can drop it, would you let it all go, your anger, and be free of that?
As long as I would hold on to it, as long as it didn't control me.
But that's what it does. Right?
Yeah, I guess it does, yeah.
What is it like to have anger, then you feel good, you feel bad, you feel happy, then you feel sad, you feel this. What's that like living that way?
You know, I don't mind. I wouldn't say I'm in an extreme place, emotionally up or down. I'm not that way. But I don't mind having feelings that I can then sort of assess, I can look at, and see if they're helpful to me at all. You're right. Anger, bitterness, hostility, there's no real place for that in my body if I want to be successful, if I want to be happy, if I want to be fulfilled. But maybe it's like just a little pellet of nuclear energy that is there, that somehow I need it at some point.
Amazing. Are you married?
No.
Have you ever been married?
No, sir.
Nice.
Nice.
Amazing.
Never even been kissed.
Really?
No.
Oh. you have no kids or anything?
No kids, no.
And why didn't you do what the blacks do and make babies out of wedlock?
Well, I was very concerned about that because I felt like if I was going to be in a relationship, first of all, I have a long-term relationship now with a woman. It's beautiful. But I didn't want to have a child in the world out there that I wasn't a part of their lives.
Yeah.
And I always felt that the women I was with when I asked myself, do I want to have children with this woman? The answer was sort of no.
Perfect.
So I mean, I would like to have had children, maybe. I would like to have been a father. I think I probably would be a pretty good father. But I really never wanted, I was very cautious about having a child out of wedlock, just because I didn't want to have a child out there that I wasn't a part of their life.
Right on. And will you make babies with the woman you're with now?
She's got grown children. She's got grown sons. So I think we're beyond that.
Meaning you're too old for it, or you just
think
not
so.
Want, you think so?
I think so.
But
maybe.
Abraham was 100 and Sarah was 99, so it's not too late.
Okay. Well, I will get to work on that, Jesse.
Amazing. So, you're Jewish, right?
Yes.
What is it like being Jewish?
What is it like?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're aware of it. It's in the back of your head oftentimes when you encounter people. The entertainment business is fortunately welcoming to Jewish people to some extent. Not that it helped me one way or the other. I don't think I had one Jewish boss. My first, the guy who really took an interest in me was an Irishman from New York.
Really?
Another guy that I studied with was an Italian from New York. Along the way, I haven't really had Jewish mentors. But it's something I think you're aware of. It's something that you sometimes encounter hostility toward. But it's nothing that I've allowed to stop me or affect me.
So you walk around thinking I'm Jewish?
No.
But what do you mean by it's in the back of your mind?
Well, I think that, you know, it's certainly something that can pop up when you see a situation or when you're in a situation.
Right.
I mean, I have had people say derogatory things about me because of my religion.
They said it to you?
Oh, yeah. I've
really?
Had that. Sure. I've had people call me a Jew or, you know, other things like that. And it's just, it's hurtful. You don't know. You wonder how to react. And sometimes, in my case, you react with anger because the anger comes from the hurt. I recognize that. I'm really grappling with the idea of the existence of a deity and what that means.
And when you say you're grappling with it, what does that mean?
I'm so fascinated, Jesse, that we as organisms, we as animals, we as human beings, we as men, are the only entities on this planet with the billions of organisms out there. We're the only ones who can think, have consciousness, self-awareness, can build things, can create everything around us. And I just wonder, where does that come from? I suppose it's easy to say that comes from God. I don't know where that level of intelligence, that level of awareness, the fact that we can even conceptualize the notion of God, it's astonishing to me. It doesn't necessarily prove that deity exists.
Oh, I see. Are you like a religious Jewish Jew person?
You know, occasionally I'll go to temple, and I go to it for a meditative reason.
Oh.
Because if I'm there, I can get into a different headspace. I can listen to the prayers, even if I don't understand everything.
Right.
It takes me to another place.
And so do you believe there is a God?
I think there is a God. I don't know what the definition is.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think he's a guy up there with a beard and looks down kindly upon us.
Well, you don't?
Well,
he looked down kindly upon us?
No, I think he does. I don't think he's a guy with a beard. I mean, the manifestation of God, is it an image of us? We were created in God's image.
We were created in his image.
Right.
Right. And so you don't believe he has a beard because you think he shaved? Or he just...
I don't know where we're going with this.
That's interesting, though. You believe there is a God, right?
I believe there's an intelligence. There's an entity. There's something out there that has imbued us with our extraordinary ability to be humans. We're not the fastest. We're not the strongest. We're not the tallest. And somehow we dominate this planet.
Yeah.
And I think in a positive way. You know, people like to say, oh, look how we've despoiled the planet. I think you look around you and everything we see, Jesse, we've created out of nothing.
Yeah.
Because of our brains, our consciousness, our awareness.
That came from God, right?
I guess somewhere, so. Huh? I guess so. I guess so.
So were you raised to be religious or whatever, or no?
No, but I'll tell you something interesting about that. When I was quite young, my mother picked us up, and we moved to Israel. And we lived on a kibbutz. You know what kibbutz is? It's an organized communal farm.
Oh, okay.
And basically, you live there, you work there. And we were young children. And so she exposed us. But if in Israel, you know, it's actually a pretty secular state. It's not wholly religious. People aren't walking around in religious garb. Those are the Orthodox. But we it was more just sort of the social, cultural inculcation, and the religion was sort of built into the social fabric of the life we had around us.
Right.
So it wasn't a deeply religious experience, but it was a deeply cultural one.
I got you. I love Israel. I've gone to Israel before. We sent a second load of people over there, and it was like amazing for me to go to Israel. Mm. You know, I heard a lot about it growing up, mm-hmm. and I knew that, or have been taught that if it wasn't for Judaism, there would be no Christianity. Mm-hmm. So I've always seen Judaism and Christianity as one, mm-hmm. you know. And so when I got a chance to go over there, we went walked through the Bible. Everything I had been reading about Israel in the Bible, mm-hmm. I got a chance to experience that, and it was amazing to me.
Yeah.
It was really amazing. It was like mind blowing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you realize the history, the everything that's there, you know, from the Roman times before, after. I remember we were in an area called Caesarea. And there was a hillside, and my brother and I were chipping away at the rocks, and we literally unearthed some Roman pottery. Like they're just sitting there,
yeah.
you know, that had been, the sea had sort of washed the hillside away.
Amazing.
And you're living in, you're just astonished by the amount of history, the depth, and of course the spirituality of the place.
Yeah, absolutely. How long did you live? Because you were born here.
Born here.
So how long did you live over there, and did you feel comfortable, and did you feel at home over there?
It was a challenge. We were there for a year and a half, and I was put right in a school with other kids. I did not speak a word of Hebrew. I learned Hebrew, learned to speak it, never learned really well to write or read it, and you know the lettering is written completely different from our alphabet,
right.
and they write from the right side to the left. Now, I'm an 8-year-old kid. My brain is already all turned upside down, and now I'm in a culture where I have to learn to write the opposite way with letters that I don't even know. So amazing. I'm sure it had some kind of crazy thing happening in my head.
That's amazing. But you didn't feel comfortable living there, or you felt like an American?
I felt not like an American, just an outsider.
You felt like an outsider?
Yeah, yeah. Because I was thrust into a dormitory with kids my own age.
Right.
When you live on a kibbutz, back then you didn't live with your parents. My brother lived in one house, my sister in another, and I in a third.
Really?
Yeah. So I was in a room with three other kids, and none of them spoke English, and I had to learn to speak the language and communicate with them, and they had never seen an American before.
Right.
And certainly someone who was dropped in their midst. So once again, I'm battling my way through.
You're like, what the?
Exactly.
How long did you live there?
A year and a half.
Oh, not real long.
No.
Not very
long.
Were you happy to leave? We left.
Yeah, it's a kid. You do what you're supposed to do. Yeah. You know, it's time to leave. Okay, we're going back. And then I came here, and I was back in school and kind of behind because I'd missed that time and had to catch up. And that was another thing I had to sort of work at, develop my skills that I had missed a year and a half out on.
Oh, yeah. Do you believe in dual citizenship?
I think so, yeah. Why not?
For some reason, some people are against that.
Yeah, I think maybe they're concerned about the loyalty that it shows, that you have a mixed loyalty. And then maybe their question, what would you do if you had a war with Israel and you were a dual citizen? I mean, that maybe comes up in people's minds. But I don't feel the need to not, I don't have a dual citizenship, but I wouldn't be against it.
Right on, man. What the?
What the hell's going on here, Jesse?
So I wanted to ask, Do you, I notice in my country, America, by the way, I grew up in Alabama.
Your country, my country too.
Right.
America.
That's right. So you put America first, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I know this is a hot political issue right now, but why shouldn't we think in terms of us being first?
Right.
I don't think we have to apologize for that.
That's right.
We're the greatest nation in the world. You know, what we have to share with the world is great. And you look around you and you see China being this imperialist power now, insinuating itself all over the world, and nobody seems to say anything about that.
I know, what a mess.
And yet if we ever say we want to go someplace, everybody says, oh, you're this imperialist nation.
What a mess. Do you care or a concern about what others say or think about you?
Oh, I suppose. I suppose I like to be thought of well.
And why is that?
Because if they don't, then I don't think they know me. They misunderstand me. And then you're put in a position of having to kind of explain yourself, and I don't want to be in that position.
But if you don't think about what others think about you, why would you ever have to explain yourself? You owe no explanation to anyone.
That's true.
Why would you have to ever explain yourself?
It's true because, Jesse, I'm a communicator, so I want to communicate.
But you can do that without having to explain yourself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I cannot disagree with you.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, working at CBS, doing what I did, which was on-air promotion and marketing a lot of the times, I did short pieces, sometimes 30 seconds, sometimes 2-3 minutes. We're working in a micro world, trying to create something that was going to then go out on a macro level to the universe. 150 million people were going to see something I did for the Super Bowl, right? Not this year, but in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, you work meticulously to try and hone your thought process. You've done that.
Yes.
Where you know exactly what you think and how to specifically get your point of view across. And you'd like to be able to people to hear that.
Not really.
You don't care.
No. I never think about if they hear it or not. If they hear it, fine. If they don't, fine. You know what I mean? Because I'm not responsible for someone else. Each individual adult are responsible for their own lives and no one else. No one is responsible for my life.
Absolutely.
I stay in my hell, I overcome my hell. It's up to me, right? And so when I speak or say things, if they get it, fine. If they don't, fine.
Yeah.
I don't think about that. Isn't that the best way to live?
Yes. And I think what you're saying, and nowadays people don't want to accept responsibility for themselves.
That's the problem.
Yeah. As opposed, they want to blame someone or something or some entity or some agency, as opposed to recognizing that they have the potential to do whatever they want to do.
Absolutely. They love victimhood. Isn't that amazing? Did you ever imagine that in the United States of America, so many people would see themselves as victims? Did you ever imagine that could happen in America when you were growing up?
No.
Me either.
I mean, I got to say, if anyone could have thought of themselves as a victim, it could have been me, because I didn't have a dad and I was trying to raise myself. But I didn't think that way at all. I didn't feel that way at all. No, I never felt I was a victim. I felt like there were some things that hadn't gone well for me, but I would overcome them. It's all about that.
Absolutely, man.
It's all about striving 100%. And overcoming.
Never giving up. Never having a, I'm not going to make it attitude. Just live your life. Do what's in front of you.
You know what I think? I think some people, because they haven't learned to speak properly, they don't have a vocabulary, they have frustration, and they can't get it out. They don't know how to express it. When you have words, when you have thoughts, when you have ideas, you can more freely communicate, even to yourself. You can, this is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling rage, I'm feeling frustration, I'm feeling happiness. And there's gradations of that. Yeah. You can't just say, screw this.
Right. People don't pay attention to what's happening on the inside of themselves.
Yeah, I believe that.
That's the problem. They're always looking on the outside, but not on the inside. They clean the glass on the outside, but they never clean the glass on the inside. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
It is.
So, do you, now that we have the great white hope in there.
Yes. Are you sure he's white? He's not orange?
Orange white. Are you as happy as I am that we finally got someone in the White House that is putting America first?
Well, that notion, yes. But some of the things he's done, I can't get behind it, because I'm not sure why he's being such a disruptor. I think that the disruption, just to be disruptive, isn't necessarily good. But I think that some of the things he's doing obviously are necessary insofar as putting us first. And putting that out there in the eyes of the world.
Right on. You know, I'm black and slow. I may be missing something because I'm happy about everything you've done, right? And I don't get tired of winning.
Uh-huh.
Right? Tell me one thing that so far he's done you think he should not have done it or should not be doing.
Well, I don't think he should have pardoned the January 6th people, of them, just with one stroke of his pen.
And why not?
Because you can clearly see, and these people were convicted in a court of law, that they transgressed against other people violently. And whether you want to say they tried to violently overthrow the government, at least we know that they were violent towards other people. And I just don't think that you do a blanket forgiveness of those people.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think
they should be pardoned, all those people?
Because I don't know, I wasn't there, right? We only have the media and the media.
We have the video evidence,
too,
though.
Anything. But it's been said that they were coerced into a lot of that stuff, that there were other people amongst the crowd that were telling. Because when you're angry, you can be easily controlled, right? And so they were saying that there were other people planted amongst them that were causing them to do some of the things that they did. So I don't know, but from what I've been told, that was the deal.
But don't you think it comes back once again to the individual responsibility? I mean, if somebody tells me to go take this gun and shoot someone, I'm going to go, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So you've got to be responsible for your actions.
And that's why I warn people all the time that they have to overcome anger, because when you're angry, you can be easily manipulated.
Yes.
And controlled.
Yes.
And so they are responsible for that in that they were not aware and responsible for their own life, whatever happened. Mm-hmm. But are you happy that the president is putting a wall around the borders and stopping the illegals from coming in?
Well, I don't know if a wall, a physical wall, is the answer, but I think that people should only come in who have some sort of documentation and a reason to be here. We shouldn't just have no sovereign country seems to have open borders.
Right.
And if they're going to be successful, and I think that you should probably come here and hopefully have something that you can do and contribute.
And why you're not in 100% agreement with the wall? It's like, a wall will stop you. Anyone ever try to break your house and you had a wall up?
Yeah. Well, I've just seen people coming through fences, like, you know, come pushing
yeah,
the fences.
Yeah, but not fences,
aside.
The wall, like what the president was building the first time around. Those big, heavy metal, not some little wire fence that you can.
Yeah. I don't know that we want to be a walled-in country.
Really?
Yeah.
Why not?
I just don't see us. I mean, we have sort of, you have negative connotations about walls, and you've got prisons, you've got the Berlin Wall, you have, this is really not my area of expertise, but
right.
Visually,
just common sense,
visually
thinking.
To see a wall, you're not going to have a wall surrounding the entire border. That seems to be an impossibility. To build a wall stretching from Baja California to where, Georgia, Texas, I don't know. That's
but then
crazy.
That's where you put the troops and everybody else.
Okay.
Where you can. You know what I mean?
We want to devote resources to that? Okay.
Yeah.
I think the key is really not servicing these people when they get here. It's like they should stay in Mexico or wherever, and then if they go through the proper procedure, then they can enter the country. But
that
not come into the country and then decide, oh, you know, you need to come here for a court appearance 2 months from now.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I noticed in Israel, when I went to Israel, they had a beautiful wall everywhere, and it stopped a lot of the crimes, and people just walking in. Did you support, you don't think Israel should have a wall either?
Israel is, as you know, it's a tiny, tiny country,
right.
And it's barraged on all sides by enemies who have seemingly vowed to destroy it. From the desert to the sea, we're going to knock you into the ocean. We want to destroy you. So Israel has had to maintain this attitude of protectionism, protect themselves, protect their homeland, protect their people.
And so you okay with Israel having a wall?
I don't think Israel has a wall all over its country either.
It's everywhere.
Not everywhere, Jesse.
Nobody can get in. It's so perfectly done, and that the Allahu Abba people, they had to build tunnels on the ground to get in because they could not go through the wall, around the wall. Isn't that amazing? Right? I love that. Am I wrong? I'm black and slow. Am I wrong?
You are black, but you're not slow.
What do you mean?
You said I'm black and slow. You're not a slow person at all. You're a highly intelligent man who can craft sentences and handle ideas and notions, and you've got a lot of going on the ball.
So you agree with me about the wall, the way Israel built their wall, we should do the same thing here, right?
No.
No? What the? Should you take care of your own home first?
Yes.
So put the wall up.
It's a physical impossibility.
That's why we have the border patrol, a little area we can't get to.
Okay.
We put human beings there, right?
Okay.
Just so you agree with that, right?
Well, is that where we want to devote our resources? Do we really?
Which is cheaper, to build a wall and put... and hire people to work there, or to leave it open, let these people come in and take care of them? Which is cheaper?
I don't know what to say, Jesse. I don't have an answer for you.
Really?
I certainly don't have the answer that it seems that you want.
No, I'm just getting feedback. I already know what I want.
Right.
And I want the wall.
Right.
And if I when I become president, I'm going to put a wall all the way around the board, all the way through Mexico, Georgia, Alabama, New York, everywhere. Isn't that cool?
I don't know if they need a wall in New York.
Will you vote for me?
Will I vote for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, Jesse. We'll have to see. Who are you running against? And when are you running?
I'm running to make my country great again.
Okay, but when are you running?
Oh, after Donald Trump.
Okay, so you're going to run for president. You're going to skip all the steps in between.
I'm going right to the top.
You're not going to mayor. You're not going to
city
council.
You're
not going to city council. You're going right to the top.
Right.
And you've got the following and the resources to do that. It's going to take a few bucks, Jesse.
I have to trust God for that.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. From a practical standpoint, let's see if you can do it.
What do you think about the horrible, and I'm calling it horrible, I don't know if you call it, that the governor of California and the mayor have done in this fire situation, and how they have screwed the city up?
I think unfortunately there's too much of an emphasis on people who can't take care of themselves. And to devote all the resources to that, I think, was unfortunate. You have people coming into our state or into our city that have not paid taxes here, have never lived here, and yet this is a very lovely place to live, so they come out here and they're taken care of. And I don't think that that's really the way we should be focusing our attention.
Yeah, and I remember when Carrie Bass was running for mayor, and there was another guy running, I can't think of his name, he built
Caruso?
Yes. I'm like, y'all need to vote for him. And I'm not a Democrat, but I'm saying, y'all need to vote for him instead of Karen has no idea what she's doing. It's not going to be good. And they voted for Karen. Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
Well, I believed it happened because I see it every day on the streets.
Were you shocked?
I was disappointed, yes.
Me too, man. What's wrong with the people?
I don't know, Jesse. I don't know. You're an observer of humans and of character. You know the community. You know the communities. People got promised things for some reason, and they didn't realize they didn't have their best interests at heart.
Promised free stuff, free housing, free this. It was just crazy, man. And now we're paying a price for it. I remember when I first moved to L.A. in 1968, I walked off the airplane from Alabama, the plantation. I grew up on a plantation. I walked off the plane, I thought I was in paradise in 68. Mm-hmm. I never imagined that my city can become this. I didn't even think that human being would allow this to happen.
Well, you know, the other thing is, it's this unchecked growth. Everything is just spread out, and everybody can sort of do. And I think that that's kind of an unfortunate situation for me.
Yeah.
I mean, L.A. always had that history of sprawl. And the reason, as you know, they didn't build up because of earthquakes. They didn't have the technology. New York is more finite. Other cities, there's an inner city, there's an area.
Yeah.
L.A. really didn't have that. So because of that urban sprawl, you have a series of communities that are strung together by freeways. And so there's this sort of disassociation with people and where we are. And unfortunately now, things have gone unchecked.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to get their arms around it. Someone has to get their arms around it.
The great White Hope will do it.
In L.A.?
Yeah, he's gonna make the whole country great again. Isn't that amazing?
We'll see.
Are you conservative?
I am conservative. I'm a fiscal conservative.
Did you vote for the great White Hope?
I did not.
What? Why not?
Because I just didn't want to see him back in office.
And why not?
Like some of the things he said he was going to do that he did. For example, pardoning the January 6th violent people. I just didn't think that was the appropriate thing for this country. It wasn't the just thing to do. It's not that those people were summoned before a kangaroo court. All of them individually appeared in court and were supposed to be a nation of laws and rules, and we can't just go out there and commit crimes against our fellow citizens. I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want someone coming to my house and banging down my door and not have them be held accountable.
Did you feel the same way when the insurrection was committed upon the country by Black Lives Matter, the radical group worse than the KKK? Did you feel the same way about them?
I was not happy with any sort form of violence against our society, against our institutions, against individuals. Not happy with any of that.
Should they be locked up?
Jesse, everybody has a chance for due process, supposedly. So if they were brought in front of a court, if they were found guilty, you can't make these blanket statements, in my opinion, about individuals and what transpired.
But we saw what they did to the country.
But see, you're saying you saw that and that was okay.
Right.
But when you saw something that happened January 6th, you're saying that was the media sort of manipulating the imagery.
Well, because I wasn't there with that, January 6th incident. But I was around the Black Lives Matter, people burning and people dying and home business. They were like in Beverly Center. Beverly Hills. And I never thought I would see that in Beverly Hills. And so I thought they should be loaded up, locked up, and put away for life.
Okay.
Do you agree with that?
Jesse, everybody is due their process. If they were found and they were convicted, yes.
And should they have been?
Jesse, it's up to the courts to decide that. If you have empirical evidence, then and a jury decides or a judge decides. Again, this, if you are found guilty of a crime, you need to pay the price.
But I notice in America today, when white people commit a crime, they're going to jail. But when black people commit crime, they don't go to jail. Why is that?
I don't know. You'll have to ask the people who run the court system. You're asking me that?
Yeah, have you noticed that?
Jesse, I'm not running for president like you are. I might start and run first for Senate or for governor. How about that?
Would you ever run for office?
We could have a debate.
Would you ever run for office?
Sure, why not?
Nice. And but you haven't noticed that with white people, they go to jail, but with blacks, they don't?
Really? So there's more white people in jails now than black people?
Yes.
There are.
They let all the blacks out. Look at the crime.
Okay.
Isn't that true?
Oh, Jesse, I don't know what you're saying, man.
What's wrong with the blacks?
I don't think there's, you can generalize at all.
What do you mean?
I don't think you can generalize.
How about generalize?
About one, it's like saying, what's wrong with the Jews? What's wrong with the Hispanics? What's wrong with the whites? What's wrong? They're individuals who are not doing good things. They're individuals who don't take responsibility for themselves, and they're individuals who are somehow troubled people.
But it's the blacks who are crying for DEI and affirmative action. They're blaming the whites and everybody for their problems, and they're angry, and they're this. What's wrong with the blacks?
What's wrong? I don't think there's anything wrong with them as a group of people. I think there may be individuals who have real issues.
Really? What do you think about the attack upon whites in America today?
Attack on whites?
Yes.
I don't think that's correct. I don't think there should be an attack on any race. Yeah.
So what do you think about the fact there is an attack upon white people, especially white men? What do you think about the attack upon the whites?
Well, I think unfortunately there's kind of an attack maybe on men in general in the attempt to sort of neutralize us,
yeah,
maybe feminize us to, yeah, some extent. And I don't think that that's correct. I don't think we need to change who we are. We just need to be responsible people. We need to be sympathetic people. And I think we need to go forth in this world and extend love to people and respect.
When you see the attack upon the whites, for example, they brought in the DEI thing, they took out all the qualified white men out of the military, out of the flying thing, airplanes, and air traffic.
Did they take
control.
Them out? They really took them out,
yes,
of those positions?
Yeah.
That I wasn't aware of.
Oh, yeah. And they called them racist, and they blamed the white man for everything. What do you think about that? Is that right to do?
Well, I don't think I accept your premise, you know, that this happened. I haven't seen the evidence that happened.
So, really? You're, yeah, a smart man. You write books.
I do write books.
You're a CBS executive.
Former.
Former CBS executive. They can't fire you. I already fired.
They never fired me, Jesse.
No.
They didn't fire
me. You're not there.
We had a nice, amicable parting of the ways,
right,
believe me.
Right.
It turned out to be very good.
He was not fired. I mean, like, he's gone. Retired. But, so, you
I'm glad you told your viewers that.
Yeah.
I was not fired.
But
let me make this clear. I was not fired.
That's right. But you haven't noticed the attack upon white people?
I've told you what I've noticed. The attack on men.
But how about whites?
I don't notice that, no.
Really? And why not?
I don't notice that attack.
Oh.
Who's attacking me?
You're not white.
What am I?
I thought you said you were Jewish.
So I'm not white at all. My skin is not Caucasian.
Well, you're
Caucasian.
White Jew.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But you haven't noticed the attack.
No.
Do you love white people?
Yes.
And you haven't noticed the attack on your loved ones?
No.
What do you think about the attack on the Jews? There have been some major... Over in New York, I don't know if you know about this, the Allahu Akbar people shouting from the ocean to the sea, right? Is it ocean to the sea or...
No, it's from the desert. It's from the desert to the sea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the ocean and the sea are pretty much the same thing. So if they're
going
to the ocean to the sea...
That means that they almost have you there. But...
They probably do.
Yeah. What did you think about the attack?
That's not good at all. Jesse,
yeah.
It's not good. You know that's not good.
I know it's not good.
Why are you asking me these questions? It's so obvious. It's so obvious when you say, you know, of course you don't want any group to be singled out and attacked. It's inhuman.
Right.
Somehow there are people in our society that have the need, or they feel the need, to make themselves feel better by,
yes,
attacking others.
It's hatred.
Yeah, it is hatred. It's anger.
And the reason I ask, because I noticed that with the whites, nobody seemed to really notice the attack on white people, and they're afraid to say it. But if it's an attack on anyone else, everybody notices, right? But they don't notice the white people. And this is a white country, founded by white people, created by white people. But for some reason, and I've been trying to get it understood, I ask everybody, but no one can really tell me why or if they notice or not. Why do you think that is?
Why do I think
no one
that no one's talking about attack on the whites?
Yes.
Well, I think people are talking about it, if they believe that, such as yourself. But again, I don't think I necessarily accept your premise that there's an attack on all white people. You know, that's something that, you're putting forth, and you're asking me these questions. But within the question, I think, is somewhat of a faulty premise.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you believe racism exists?
Absolutely.
And where's your proof?
No, I think racism exists from all races toward other races. I think there's some people who, because of another person's ethnicity, they are critical of them, or they don't like them. So if you want to call that racism, I would call it that.
Why not call it what it is? It's hatred.
Okay.
And not racism.
Well, I think it's synonymous.
When you call it racism, it sounds like something you can't resolve, right? But if you call it anger or hatred, you can overcome that.
Absolutely.
If you want to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, I think it's synonymous.
Racism doesn't exist. And I grew up on a plantation under Jim Crow. Black people never had the word racism until the civil rights movement came along. Do you agree with me that one of the worst things that ever happened to the blacks was the civil rights movement, other than abortion?
No.
You don't agree?
No.
Why not?
Well, because maybe at the time, and again, I'm not a student of history, maybe at the time, there were people who felt that they were being subjugated. And they needed someone to help them realize that they wanted equality. Now,
but that wasn't true, though. And I was there.
Okay, well, but that's your experience.
And that idea only came about because of Martin Luther King and Jesse Jackson and all those people. Black people were not thinking that way prior to someone telling them to think that way.
Once again, Jesse, I'm not sure I accept that premise.
I was there.
Okay, well, that was your experience.
No, everybody around me was like that.
Okay, well, again, you're telling me something that is absolutely your truth.
Is it amazing?
It's not empirically provable.
It's not my truth. I don't have a truth.
What do you have?
Nothing.
So you're a provocateur. That's what this is all about.
What's a provocateur?
Provocateur.
What's that?
You like to provoke.
No.
No, you want to provoke a situation. You want to provoke a response.
No.
And by setting up certain premises, you're hoping to elicit a response that's going to perhaps be incendiary, that's going to inflame people.
See, I told you I'm black and slow. I didn't even know I was doing that. That's not my intent.
Well, you remember Howard Cosell, the great sports guy.
Yeah.
And they used to say he was a provocateur. He would say something that would get a rise out of somebody. And it was fun journalism. It was okay. It would get people talking. And he would say things that were controversial. And if you say things that are controversial, you're going to have people come down on both sides of the issue. And then what you're going to do is create tension, abrasion, and fighting between them.
So
we're fighting over what? Out of a notion, out of a concept.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be.
Right. Did Howard know that he was doing that? Was he doing it intentionally or just the way he was? And other people said that about him, but it's not the way he thought about it.
No, I think he definitely knew that he because he was a highly intelligent man.
Right.
He also knew that he had information maybe that you didn't. So he would rail against a particular person or say something on the sports media. He didn't mind being at the center of controversy. And yes, he would be provocative, even if maybe he said things that other people might not have said, because that was his truth. if he questioned Muhammad Ali, why, champ, you know, why are you not going to fight Joe Frazier? Yeah. Whatever that was,
you sound like him.
It was putting a microphone in someone's face in order to get a reaction.
Oh, amazing.
So that's a provocateur.
Oh, thank you. See, I told you I was black and slow. So I got to ask, because of time, were women created to lead or to follow?
You know, I think... women are created to be great beings.
And were they created to lead or to follow?
I think women can do whatever they want to do as long as they're happy and fulfilled.
And were they created to lead or to follow?
I think that's the third time you asked me that question.
You didn't answer it.
I did. I answered it. I didn't give you the answer you wanted.
No,
I think as long as they're happy and they're fulfilled, I think they should do whatever they want to do.
But I didn't ask you if they were happy and fulfilled. I'm asking, were they created to lead
right,
or to follow?
Right, but that's my answer. That's my answer.
Would you ever follow a woman?
Yeah.
You would?
Yeah.
Babe.
Depends where she's trying to take me.
Amazing. So.
We're having a good time, Jesse.
You really would follow a woman?
Jesse. Yes, I would follow a woman.
Really?
Yes.
Would you ever marry? Oh, I don't believe. I believe that men should not marry educated women.
Oh, okay.
Because educated women don't make for good wives and mothers. Do you agree with me on that?
I do not.
And why not?
Because I think that educated women can make fantastic wives and mothers.
How? They don't, though. Well, because they're in competition with their women are already jealous of men, right? And so they're in competition with their husband. I even know men that stay home and be the wife and the mother, pretend, while the wife go out of work. Isn't that beta?
Yeah. That's alpha, beta, zeta, data, and delta.
Would you ever do something like that?
No.
And don't you think men are weak for doing that?
I think if that's what they need to get over, they should do it.
Oh.
If men think that that's what they need to do, they should do it.
But what kind of man would think that, though?
I don't know. That's not the way I think.
And they call themselves
husbands.
What a beta, huh?
House husbands. Yeah.
Okay. Is that a mess?
I don't know. Maybe their testosterone is low.
Should men play in women's sports?
No.
All right. That's one thing the president did. He changed that law.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I can't imagine having a daughter or daughters and have them participate in a sport or a man who's genetically a man is playing alongside them and competing against them.
And should women be allowed to play in men's sports?
Well, they don't want to.
Should they be allowed?
Interesting. No.
Nice. I mean, I got to put you on the hot seat.
Why?
I need you to answer these questions.
I'm already on the hot seat here.
You're not. We've been having fun.
We have been fun.
Yeah. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible. Right?
The hot seat.
It's a man.
A man has testicles and a penis.
True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
Not all the time.
Is America the best country on this side of heaven?
It's the best country on the earth.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Would it be better to do an episode? Who would do better on an episode of Survival? Barack Obama or Donald Trump?
Oh, have no idea.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
Have you ever told a woman she was fat?
If a woman has a mirror, she already knows it.
And so have you ever told a woman she was fat?
No.
Should a man ever tell a woman she's fat?
As I say, if a woman has a mirror, she knows it. I might remark on the corpulence of a woman to a friend.
Do you tremble knowing that white people are becoming a minority in America today?
I do not tremble. I am not fearful.
Nice. And have you ever told anyone how the cow ate the cabbage?
How the cow ate the cabbage?
Yes.
Is that a euphemism for something?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Tell me what that means.
It's when you're honest with people.
You're what?
Honest.
Oh, have I ever been honest with people? Yes, frequently.
You just told them the truth.
Yes, of course.
Amazing. True or false, sending your kid to a public school system is child abuse.
I think it depends on the school system. Depends where that school system is.
Amazing. Did you have fun?
I had fun, yeah.
It was amazing.
Had a great time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for taking on the hot seat, and thanks for the conversation.
Appreciate it.
Tell the people how to get your books and your website and whatever else you want to put out there.
All right. I would love for people to take a look at this book. It's now available on Audible. It's called The Unexpected Danny Green. From Mississippi to Manhattan, Harlem to Hollywood, boxing was just the beginning. And it's now available on Audible, as I said. And if you want to leave me a message or anything, you can reach me at paulrfriedman.com. Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you, Jesse.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. Thank you. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to support our work by going to thefallenstate.tv or locals.com. You got to get Punchy's coffee. Go to jesseleepeterson.com/shop. All right. And every dime of it goes right back to the organization to make our work happen. So thank you for that. Besides, it's really, really good coffee. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, ring the bell, tell everybody about the show. And if you would like to see other interested guests on the Fallen State, contact my producer at producer@thefallenstate.tv. All right? Thank you all. I appreciate it. Thank you. Amazing, huh?
Amazing.
That was amazing.